Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes is our guest. Thanks for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. And you can send us an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Welcome, Mayor. Thanks for being with us today.
Emily, it's a pleasure. Believe me, we started budget hearings for 2019 at 8 o'clock this morning. We've been going strong, and probably will be going up till 5 or 6 o'clock tonight at least. So it's good to step away from digits and numbers.
Happy to be of service.
You know, the next 35 minutes. So greetings from the Gem City, and it's good to be on with you today.
Thanks so much. I'm going to start out with a quick comment on the Frankfort Hot Dog Festival, which I know took place at the end of July. I saw that the winner of the hot dog eating contest ate 13 hot dogs in 10 minutes. I did look up the world hot dog eating record for 2018, which was won in New York at Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. And it was 74 dogs in 10 minutes. So I guess my question, Mayor, is can the local talent in Frankfort touch this record next year?
I don't know if I want them to touch that record. It just doesn't sound healthy to me. 75 hot dogs in 10 minutes. You know, I'll tip my cap to Ed Anderson. He's the gentleman that ate 13 hot dogs in 10 minutes. I thought it was pretty respectable. But here's the thing, Emily. I have never seen a crowd. I had the pleasure of emceeing this event at the main stage, and we had people lined up all the way to Main Street, almost a block long, just to get a visual of the stage. And we had close to 10 participants. So you never know. I mean, this could gain traction. NHK Seating of America donated $500, so our grand prize winner won $500 in cash. Not bad for eating 13 hot dogs in 10 minutes for 10 minutes worth of work. So who knows? If we get some more donations and that prize money is up next year, this footprint could grow, and you know, we could be competing against out-of-state, out-of-city talent at next year's Hot Dog Festival. I think it will be a neat tradition to get going again. And, you know, like everyone says, you can't have a hot dog festival without a hot dog eating contest. So it was a lot of fun.
I concur with that. I do have one more quick question. Who is the arbiter of the hot dog contest? Because in New York, it's the District Attorney of Brooklyn. So who is standing there watching over that record taking place?
So it was a volunteer effort. I asked all my department heads to come up, along with Councilman Joe Palmer. Downtown is his district. So we had all the department heads from the fire chief, the police chief, our building inspector, and each volunteer was assigned a contestant. So that individual would be marking down the amount of hot dogs, refilling their cup of water. I personally cooked the hot dogs that day, and not knowing how many people we would have, I probably cooked close to 300 hot dogs. So we were giving away a lot of hot dogs. A local grocery store, Schultz IGA, donated the ballpark Franks. So we were pretty legit, had our act together. Our DJ was playing Who Let the Dogs Out. It was a lot of fun for the entire family.
That sounds wonderful, Mayor. Okay, so we're going to shift gears now that summer is ending. School started in Frankfort last week. When West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis was here a few weeks ago, we talked about school safety. And we talked about the handheld metal detectors the state is giving school districts who request them. I know that Frankfort is using school resource officers, but I believe we've reached out to the Frankfort School Superintendent and haven't heard back yet on whether they've decided to use the state-provided metal detectors. Do you want to speak to that, or can you?
Yeah, I absolutely can. So after the incident at Noblesville Middle School happened this past spring, that really, really hit close to home. Now, up to that point in time, I think I read there were 17 or 18 school shootings across this country. But when it happens an hour and a half away from you, it really hit home. And, you know, I immediately reached out to our chief of police and then our school superintendent, and I said, we've got to do something, and we've got to do something now. And so I challenged our chief of police at that time. I said, Troy, I want SROs in every single one of our schools by August 8th, when the kids go back this year. And that was no small feat to accomplish that. We had to rearrange our shift patrols. We had to get right to work in the budget process, so next year we are properly allocating for those two additional resource officers. Up until next year, we are just shifting officers off of our patrol shift, which thankfully we were able to do. Moving our police department to 12-hour shifts this year from 8-hour shifts is giving us more officers on the street at any given point in time, so we're not being derelict to the other needs in the city. And Chief Bacon took it a step further, and not only do we have officers in every school starting last week when the kids came back, but they are also trained. They went to SRO school, they passed a test, so they are certified. And we have a floating SRO officer as well that bounces between all the schools. And this isn't only important for us to keep our kids safe, to have an individual there to mitigate a threat should a threat come through the door, but also to work with our kids, you know, be an additional positive mentor or influence in their life, teach them about success and create that bridge between the public safety community and our youth at a very early age. Now, this would not have happened had our school board and our school superintendent opened up the doors. I said, listen, we'll fund this because the school already allocates a portion of their budget every year to help offset the cost when it comes to officers at the middle school and the high school. So we're both sharing in the cost, but the new officers are being funded by the city. And Don DeWeese, our school superintendent, was graceful. He opened up his arms. The entire board did and said, yes, our students need this. Now, when I talk to our public safety officials about implementing metal detectors and wands, they were hesitant against that for this year. We want to see how this program goes. We saw some downsides to that of the culture and the atmosphere of bringing children in, lining them up, making them all go through metal detectors. We saw more negatives than positives for that. Not saying that we couldn't phase that in the future, but we felt as though getting an armed and trained police officer in our schools, all the schools, was much more important than a simple little metal wand. Now, I think it's good that the state has this program together. It's obviously what some communities want to do, but having warm bodies there that are trained, that are tactical, that are strategic, in our mind, that's much more important. That's where we wanted to start, and the relationship between the schools and the city will continue to be fluent. We'll receive feedback on how our program is going, and in the future, we will make amendments if we feel like we can step up our presence and make it that much more effective.
Mayor, can you speak to some of those negatives, get a little more specific about what those might be in terms of the metal detectors?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about a bunch of kids getting to school at one point in time, you think about when you go into an airport and you have one school resource officer. That means every single child is going to have to go through that. And if they have mundane items on them that make that metal detector go off, then you're going to have a staging area to take that child to. And then you're going to wand them. Then you're going to pat them down. And when you're dealing with young females, obviously, that presents a very large logistical issue. And with only having one police officer at each of our schools, we felt as though the first step, that would be a little bit too intrusive for the culture. Again, I think having an armed police officer, a trained police officer that's able to mitigate threats, read body language, interact with students, and quickly intercept a threat is much more important than having a wand or a metal detector. And those thoughts were shared not only by our school officials, but our public safety officials. And, you know, Emily, I'll be the first to tell you, I'm a mayor, I love my job, but I am not a police officer. I am not a police chief. I put the best people that are possible in those positions. My chief of police is a graduate of the FBI Academy, one of the top in his class, and I believe he's one of the best chiefs of police in the state of Indiana, being a young individual. So I have to trust the intelligence and the reporting they're giving to me, take all that into consideration, and then make the decision that's best for our constituents and the schools.
So if anyone can use these handheld metal detectors, you know, wand the students with them, as you were saying, could someone who's not a resource officer be utilizing that? Could it be a counselor or a trusted adult who's undergone some kind of training? Does it have to be the school resource officer?
I'm not sure. I'm not positive on that, to be quite honest with you. I would need to consult our chief of police. I don't know if there's any logistical or legal issues there. As a layman, I wouldn't think there would be. But again, I'm not sure at this point in time. So again, you know, we thought having a police officer there to start was a tremendous first step. We put this entire program together in a period of 3 months, and you know, we wanted to be a community. A lot of communities talk about doing something. We took a decisive, immediate step to let our parents know, to let our teachers know that when our kids came back, there was going to be a much enhanced additional safety factor for them. And having trained armed police officers visually there, we felt as though what was the most dramatic step that we could take. And again, you know, we are in the school system, so we have to have a good relationship and we have to be diplomatic with our school officials. So their thoughts on this echoed the sentiments that I've shared with you, and we believe it's a much safer situation with what we've done. We're proud of that, and we expect that only to grow and get better in the future.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. This week, Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes is our guest. Thanks for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send us an email to ask@wbaa.org. Or again, you can tweet a question to our Twitter account @WBAA News. So send those questions in now for Mayor McBarnes. Moving on to the next question, the Frito-Lay expansion in Frankfort received its final approval. Frito-Lay says it's investing $159 million to expand the current space and add more production lines. And they say they're adding 50 jobs. So as a part of any of the negotiation process, did you have the ability to ask for even more jobs to be added?
Well, this was above and beyond anything that I thought was even possible. An investment of $160 million in a smaller community like Frankfort, you know, this puts us on a stage that's comparable with any community in the state of Indiana, including Lafayette and West Lafayette. And we are incredibly proud of this. I can tell you, when we started this process out, and I was in on it from the very, very beginning with our finance committee, this investment was actually much, much lower. And we were competing for that lower investment with other sister plants of Frito-Lay across the country, in North Carolina, in Georgia, and in other states. We were all competing for this. And as we opened up the lines of communication, as we were receptive to what corporate was asking for, as we were professional, you know, we pride ourselves on professionalism and putting good systems in place to handle these types of negotiations. When I came into office, I said I want a small town feel with big city sophistication. So as our conversations grew, more money came to the table, more jobs came to the table, more money came to the table, and we ended up with a $159 million project. I was talking to the senior economic development director out of Plano, Texas, and she said this is the single largest project she's ever overseen in her career. Same way with the government affairs official that came in this past Monday. He said, Chris, you know, with my 16 years with the company, this is the single largest investment I've ever seen occur. So we are incredibly proud of this. We talk a lot about Frankfort being the city that feeds the state, that feeds the world, and competing not only for jobs to happen here in Frankfort, but investment for the Hoosier State, and adding to this premise that the Hoosier State is a state that works. And I'm proud of our local leaders. We made this possible working together as a team, and it's going to be great for the future of Frankfort. It anchors our largest employer here in the city. It adds significantly to our assessed value. And as I've been preaching since day one in office, the more private investment we can bring here, the more we're going to drive up assessed value, which means a less of a burden on our taxpayers, because it's going to drive those tax rates down, because we can spread the cost of running this city over a larger tax base. We don't need more taxes. We need more taxpayers. And that's what these jobs and that's what this investment represents. It's a mega investment, and we're very proud of it.
And that is a large amount of money. I guess I would ask again, and correct me if this figure is incorrect. I have an employment number for the Frito-Lay facilities in Frankfort. They currently employ about 1,100 people. So again, does 50 jobs, does that sound like a lot of jobs? I mean, could there be more jobs added?
Well, because of this investment, there will be a significant amount of new jobs in the future. So a part of this project is a 35,000 square foot warehouse that's being built. That warehouse is being built so that three new future lines can be implemented in that space. So when Frito's ready to bring on a new line, you know, whether we're bringing Funyuns, the manufacturing of Funyuns through this investment, but as they bring on new lines in the future, those lines will come here to Frankfurt. And when those lines come here to Frankfurt, that will mean additional jobs. So not only do we get the 50 jobs, and I might add, those jobs are paying north of $22 an hour. So they're good paying jobs with good benefits. People can have careers with these jobs. But this investment also opens up a dramatic amount of job opportunities and creation for the future, which we are very excited about. It anchors our largest employer here. And also, we sent a message to corporate that Frankfort, Indiana is a good place to do business. So they have a term within the PepsiCo Frito-Lay system of a megasite. And I want Frankfurt to become a megasite. And this investment of $160 million gets us well on our way. We're not there yet, but when we do, watch out. And it contributes to the region, it contributes to the state, and it's something that's good for everyone.
We actually have a question circling back from a caller to the metal detector subject. John called in and says he believes the metal detectors are a waste of time. He wants to know, quote, who's arguing with who about what's most effective, and also what can be done outside of the school to make sure Frankfurt doesn't have a disaster?
Well, that's a great question, and you know, it's not an argument. I want to be clear about that. No one has been arguing. We made this big move happen of putting an officer in every school because of cooperation and diplomacy and partnerships and teamwork. Without all of that, none of this would have happened. We simply received some feedback because when I went into this, I not only wanted a police officer in every school, but I wanted metal detectors there. I wanted to go the full nine yards. But again, I'm not a public safety official. I am not a police officer. I'm not a detective. And so I have to put the best people with the training and the background in those positions and then receive intelligence and feedback from them in the decision-making process. And the feedback from our chief of police, our deputy chief, our officers, and our school officials were that with this first step, we wanted to get bodies in all of these schools with the proper training, and that's the most important thing we can do for our children. Now, if our officers in the schools receive intelligence that something's going on with, you know, how we keep an eye on social media nowadays and text messages and Instagram, we can intercept those threats, and then, of course, someone could be pulled aside before they're even able to enter the building, and a search could occur. You know, that could still happen with probable cause, without a metal detector, without a wand. Now, what can be done outside of the schools? Okay, that's a great question. I think the largest reason we see drugs increasing in community, violence increasing in communities, is really the breakdown of the family structure. You know, our counselors in our schools are spending more time counseling our children on problems at home than they are working with them on aptitude tests and getting Johnny and Susie geared up for their skill set and a job that could fit their skill set and getting them set up for success in life. I'm not saying that's not happening at all, but I talk to our guidance counselors, and they're having to focus on all these issues that happen in the home. So I think that's where our not-for-profit sector comes in. I think that's where our churches come in. I think that's where our volunteer organizations come in. And we need to be getting to know our neighbors. We need to be participating in programs like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Coach Kids, getting out there and mentoring our children who might not have a positive influence in their life because not all children do, our Boys and Girls Club. And we all as citizens, I think, have a responsibility to do that. It's not just government. It's not just our guidance counselors. It's not just our teachers or our police officers. We all need to be going out and making a positive difference in people's lives, being kind to our children, giving them a good, positive mentor and influence to look up to. And I think over time, that is the best way. That is the best way that I think we can make a difference in smaller communities, in local government, and thwart eventual dangers and threats.
So one follow-up question to that. If we're saying schools need to do more, how do schools have the financial resources to implement everything they possibly can to keep schools safe?
Well, I'm a believer that more money can always go to our schools, and I am not an expert in school funding. Being a different entity of government and a different elected body, I would have to have our elected school board and our superintendent speak to those types of issues. As a citizen, I think we can always be driving more funding there. But, you know, that's why as mayor, I take so seriously these investments like Frito-Lay, because investments like Frito-Lay and Nickel Plate Flats and amenities like Prairie Creek Park, it's creating an amenity infrastructure and a career infrastructure in our community that's going to drive more investment, that's going to bring more home builders to this community. You know, we haven't had a new housing subdivision in the past 30 years in our community. But now that we're talking about Prairie Creek Park, Nickel Plate Flats, we locked down the $160 million investment at Frito-Lay, the $35 million investment at Donaldson Company, and 75 new jobs coming there. I'm finally having home builders and subdivision developers reach out to me and say, hey, Chris, we're interested in building homes in Frankfort to the tune of $175,000 or $230,000. And as we bring more people here to this community and more investment, that means more investment and more revenue opportunities for our schools so they can do more. So although I'm not on the school board and I can't directly impact those things, I can open up our community to be a rich environment for investment, which is going to bring more opportunities and more revenue to our schools. But again, I'm going to emphasize, it's not just the schools, it's not just local government, it's our neighborhoods, it's our citizens. We all have an incumbent responsibility to volunteer in organizations, get involved in our local churches. You know, people ask me all the time, Chris, what can I do to make this city better? Go out and get to know your neighbor. Be kind. Sign up to volunteer in Big Brothers Big Sisters, the Boys and Girls Club, coach kids, take on a student as a mentor, go and have lunch with them on a weekly basis if you're a professional, and talk to them about if they dedicate themselves to school, they're respectful to authorities, you know, they stay out of trouble, they do the small things right in their day-to-day lives, that they can go on and be successful. And I can tell you, you have no idea the difference and the impact that's going to make in that young person's life and lead them down a road of success as opposed to a road of crime and drugs and perhaps violence in the future. And I'm a staunch believer in that.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. We're talking with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We have another question from a caller. I'm going to go ahead and read this to you, Mayor. It says, I'm pretty sure there were illegals working on the school, Nickel Plate Flats, and the new health clinic. Was the mayor aware of that, and is there a system to stop that from happening?
Well, I have no clue what is being referred to as the healthcare clinic. I can only assume the only healthcare clinic that we've had built here in the community is over on the east side of the community. That was a private development. Nickel Plate Flats was a private development. Although there were incentives given, it was a private development. Government did not build that project. So I can't speak to the individuals that were hired, and I'm not going to even begin to hypothesize or theorize on who was hired. Now, as a local government, we are mandated to perform E-Verify on all employees that come into the city. I can speak to that. We E-Verify everyone. Obviously, I'm a believer in legal immigration. I'm a believer in people living here legally. Do I think that the immigration system needs to be more streamlined in our country? I absolutely do. I've seen it firsthand. I know a dear friend that he's an Italian and he's a CEO. He moved here. He had a visa to be here, but he wanted to become a full-time citizen. And I saw what Giuseppe went through. Thank goodness he had the financial resources to go out and to hire attorneys to get him through that process, and now he and his family can stay here. I often wonder about individuals that are in that lower or perhaps even the lower end of the middle class, how do they even begin to navigate the immigration system that we have? But also, I would really caution the caller, you know, be very, very careful in making those types of statements. Unless you were there, unless you, I guess, were a part of those projects, to make statements like that and to cast shadow on these private developments, I don't think that's a good thing, and I don't think it's a very responsible thing to do.
Okay, Mayor, I want to move on to one last topic in our final minutes. You have a meeting this coming Monday about the proposed overpass that could be built in Frankfurt on Roy Scott Parkway, and you're making a final decision about going forward with this project and partnering with the county to apply for grant funding through the local tracks program. So what's left to decide about the path forward? What would deter you from working with Clinton County on this?
Well, over the past 7 years, the only reason we've gotten anything done is the great partnership between the city and the county, and it's been a pleasure being a part of that. Before, the relationship was so fractured that, you know, each person had their own turf. Thanks to the partnership, Ivy Tech has happened, Nickel Plate Flats has happened, the investment of ConAgra Foods has happened, and just on and on and on. So number one, you know, I would encourage any other government out there listening, if you don't have a great relationship with your county officials, do we sing kumbaya on everything? No. But we do work together, and we're diplomatic, and we're respectful, and that's been a big part of our success. Monday night's going to be all about hearing from our engineers. The city and the county jointly have hired an engineering firm to perform a feasibility study to tell us, okay, how much is this going to cost? Where's the location? And, of course, you alluded to that, Roy Scott Parkway between State Road 28 and County Road 0. The idea of building an overpass in Frankfurt has been talked about for decades. And this is perhaps a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for our community, for the state to come up with a program to fund 80% of what could be an $11 million project. So the city and the county would fund $2 to $2.2 million, which would put our respective buy-ins to the project at approximately $1 or $1.1 million. It's a steal for what we're getting. And I think what this could do is it could jumpstart our economic development opportunities in our industrial park. Having an overpass there, it's going to be a fantastic addition for plants like ADM, Bailey Trucking, NHK General Seating, who needs to get real-time deliveries to places like Subaru. So it could have an impact regionally in making sure that we can transport goods from A to B in a reasonable time. Because at times, our crossings are closed for an hour and 15 minutes. And I've been very hard about this in the past 4 or 5 months. We are now ticketing the railroad. If any citizen sees a train blocking a track for more than 10 minutes, call Central Dispatch. We'll send an officer there. So it's good for all those things, convenience and economic development. But, Emily, it's also important for safety. Just yesterday, I saw an ambulance stopped at the railroad tracks, lights blaring, waiting on a train to go by. I pray no one was having a stroke. I pray no one was having a heart attack. This is a real safety issue for our community. So if I had to guess, I could say that we're all going to come together on Monday night. We're going to work through this. We're going to put a competitive application together, and we're going to make a case as to why the state needs to give us $11 million to build this project. And I think it could be a huge step forward for Frankfurt, and it would be another resemblance of the great partnership that the city of Frankfurt and Clinton County has together.
And Mayor, one last question. If you don't apply or that process changes somehow, what would the backup be in that case?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we definitely would not have the money to fund an $11 million overpass ourselves, being the size of community we are. I mean, we're in the budget. We're in budget talks all day today, and I have proposed a truly balanced budget that meets the needs of paving, road rebuilding, sidewalks, public safety, parks department. I mean, for a smaller community to get a project done of this magnitude, we need help, period. So I guess I can make this really simple. If the powers that be decide not to go that direction on Monday night, which I would be shocked if they do, this is a community meeting at 7 p.m. at the Frankfurt School Administration Building on Wabash Street. It simply won't get done, but I won't accept that.
That's our time for today. Mayor McBarnes, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfurt. Send us your questions, as always, at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.